Again, and as I was kind of pulling up to Ventura for this weekend, I thought, man, this place is super familiar. And I was like, oh, right, I was here this summer. And it's good to be with you guys again. It's really cool to touch base with some of you again so soon. I didn't know when I would see you again, but lo and behold, here we are. And this weekend, as you've seen from some of the icons and the posters and the things that we have up here, it was all about technology. And so what I have for you this morning, my title, what we're going to study here a little bit, which is really going to mean nothing after I tell it to you. It's a title that I kind of gave myself, is called When Technology Strikes, or When Tech Attacks is another way. I was kind of basing it in my mind off of these shows that we see when animals attack or when vacations attack or whatever the networks have done to try to make money off of us. Some kind of idea of when something goes wrong when we were hoping it would go right. And I wanted to ask you guys if you've ever done this, and I'm sure we have, where you break out like the photo album of grandma or grandpa or your mom or your dad, and you get out this book and it's full of something that we're not as familiar now, which is like paper printed photos. It's on film paper, and you break these photos out and you look through them, and what do you usually do when you look at the styles, the hairstyles, the clothing styles? Oh man, you laugh yourself to death, right? And usually, like my parents, we were like looking at their wedding photos, and like the style choices of that time are just so ridiculous. Like we're just cracking up. I mean, their hair is like spray painted to the ceiling. I mean, it's just this big old beehive with like stuff stuck in it. And I'm thinking, Mom, why did you dress like that? That is insane. And she's like, well, honey, that was the style of the time. And so we go through photo after photo after photo, and there's a lot of burnt orange. There's a lot of mustard yellows. A lot of colors that we, aren't familiar with. And never mind, you see photos of their homes, like there's a picture of mom and dad in their living room and, the shag carpet and just the really ornate couches and the kind of sculpture-esque stuff that they had for lighting. It's just crazy. It's hilarious. And so we're all laughing about it, but here's the really scary news, is that because film was expensive, and they, you couldn't like just take a snapshot and have it instantly. You took a whole roll of 24 pictures. Imagine only taking 24 pictures. That's so psychotic to me now. Like 24 pictures, and you took it in and you had it developed and it was sent back to you. So they don't have a whole lot of photos of that age. What I am hilariously waiting for is, do you realize how many pictures of our ridiculous looking kids we're going to have? I mean, there are virtual terabytes after terabytes of the way we dress now, of the things that we think are cool now. Someday, we're just going to swipe through album after album after album of the hairstyles that you are going to laugh at yourself for. You're going to say, I can't believe I looked like that. I can't believe I dressed like that. I'm wearing a Justin Bieber t-shirt. What was I thinking, right? And there was a time when you're just like, this is so cool. Take tons of selfies, and click, 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 click. We are going to have volumes of material on you. We're going to have volumes. So start deleting now. But when tech attacks. And so what we're looking at in this concept of technology and what is the real problem, and we kind of established that the problem is not having technology. I mean, remember when the wheel was the new thing? That was crazy. We thought the world was going to fall apart, right? I mean, remember when we got electricity? I mean, we thought the world was going to fall apart. That's the devil's substance, right? I mean, every layer of technology that we've developed, we have always thought it was going to be the end of the world. When we discovered nuclear power, at the end of the world. I mean, we always have thought technology was going to kill us and destroy us. And kind of like we were saying today, I mean, that is as old as time. But there's always been that difficulty. So the reality is not that technology it should change our perspective on God, really. The reality is also that it can fail us. I mean, technology, modern medicine, people, all those things can fail us. And we know this, but we're not going to say don't get a cell phone, don't go to the doctor, and don't have friends who are humans. You're obviously going to have to be involved in this world and the things of it in that way. None of that's going anywhere. The real problem then, and the way tech strikes, and the way that it can, and humans and modern medicine, any of those things, the way they can fail us, is when we put our hope in those things, is when we start saying we are really something because look at how far modern medicine has come. We are really something. Like, look at how healthy people are. We used to live, to 30 years old was some average age at some point in our horrible human history, and now we're living you know, to we're 100 and we're getting our hearts replaced and we're getting things worked on. We're like, look how awesome we are. Guys, obviously that's going to be the problem, is when we're putting our trust in those things that we already know can fail us. And so what I want to tell you today, or the story I want to tell you, the illustration I do want to use, it's kind of a familiar one. I'm going to tell you to open to 1 Samuel 17. And when I say open to 1 Samuel 17, you already kind of know who this is about. But I'm going to pull a fast one on you. We are going to talk a little bit about David and Goliath, but I'm going to talk about a part of David and Goliath that we don't often talk about. It's just not as popular of a section. It's not as movie-worthy in some ways. But I want to look at the build-up to David and Goliath. I'm going to get right up to the part here before the whole battle between David and Goliath actually happens, because this is where you see the tech. This is where the technology and the failure of it or the question of it really comes into play. So 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. So first, let's set the scene, okay? It says, "Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah." So notice it's Philistines who are on Israelite territory, okay? So they're moving in. There's a reason to fight here. "And they camped between Socoh and Azekah and Ephabdamim." And verse 2, "And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered, and they camped in the valley of Elah, and they drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them." Okay, so here's a typical face-off. A typical face-off. You know, you gather up your armies, and there was probably some reasonableness for that. It's because if you could gather up a really scary-looking army, maybe you would draw up for battle, and you would say, "Whoa, sorry, you guys are way better than we thought," and it would just be over. And there was times when that happened. So there was a positive possibility of kind of gathering up just to face off, is maybe we'll scare the other person off. You know, and Jesus will say that, like, who's not going to consider the size of their army before they go out to fight? Then maybe you'll just make terms of peace. So this is a common thing to say, think about the battle before you even enter it. Check out your enemy, okay? So they come together, though. And one reason we see here, guys, that people tend to put hope in the kind of tech that we all, that we all can put our hope in at times, is because when they draw up in this typical fashion, army to army, it is the battle tech. It is who has the bigger weapons, the more people. In other words, you know, you've got, you know, an iPhone 4 and I have an iPhone 6. And it's like, so what? It's like, well, we might say so what in this context, but what is it about our tech and our medicine and our status? Why do we put any hope in that stuff? Because folks, without that stuff, you're just the same as everybody else in the world. And as corny as I know that probably sounds, I'm just a regular person with an iPhone 4, and you're a regular person with an iPhone 6. And just when we might think, oh, that is the dumbest thing, Eli, I've ever heard, nobody does that. So you've never put any status in your house or your car or your clothing. You've never put any status in that. Folks, you know we put status in that. Because what is the difficulty? What do we say, and what do we see, and what do we say when someone shows up to a worship assembly wearing ratty clothes? We don't put status in that stuff, do we? Well, God does. No. No, he doesn't. In fact, God has gone on record and he says, "I don't show what? Partiality, favor," exactly. Whatever version yours says. He says, if someone comes into your assembly and you say because of their appearance, "Here, you're a footstool for me, sit at my feet." God says, that is sin and that is wrong. God has gone on record and he says, "I'm not even looking at that stuff. I'm not even looking at that stuff." He says, "I don't even see that." Now, and so what I'm saying is you're like, well, you know, when we put it in those terms, that is corny. Let me make it more corny. Can you imagine if you showed up with an iPhone 4 to services? What's wrong with you? What'd you come here with an iPhone 4 for? What does that say to God? It says, "I am choosing to not offer you the best. I'm choosing not to offer you the best." And some of you are like, "Holy goodness. I never thought about the power of that. Why do I have to offer God my best clothes on Sunday and I don't have to offer him the best OS? What's wrong with me?" You never thought about that, have you? You're all going to go home today and say, "Mom, the preacher told me it was a sin to have an iPhone 4. I got to upgrade." It's like, yes, you're right. Why have we stopped at clothing for what's good enough for God and what's good enough for his people? And it's like, that's why I put my scriptures on an iPad today. I'm not bringing a paper Bible. I got to offer him the best. Right? It's absurd. Yes, yes. It's all absurd when you look at it from that from that standpoint. God doesn't look at that stuff. He doesn't care. It's not what he's looking at, and he's told us it's a sin if we do. And so we know, and I know we know this, folks. You know that stuff. But when these armies gather up here, all they have to look at, we're all just people. We're all flesh and blood. We can all die out here today. Who's got the best tech? That's all they can judge it from. This is why it's a sinful struggle for us. This is why your iPhone 4 makes me feel better when I've got the 6. It's the only thing I can judge different about you because you're just as human as me. And so they gather up to do this. Now look at verse 4. Then, so let's show our tech. Get your phones out and show it to each other and let's see who's the best. Verse 4. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height, check this out, was 6 cubits and a span. Whoa. That's right. Think about that, guys. 6 cubits and a span. Oh, my gracious. I can't even. I mean, 4 cubits maybe. 5 is really something. But you put 6 cubits and then throw a span in there, I am freaking out. Unbelievable. Yeah. Thank you, Miles. Yeah, so, I mean, right. So we got 9.5 feet, 10 feet tall, somewhere in there, right? But look at this. Verse 5. And he had a bronze helmet on his head. And he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed, mark it, folks, 5,000 shekels of bronze. 5,000 shekels. I can't even imagine that. Of course you can't, because these are not weight systems you know anyway, right? Verse 6. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders, and the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. A weaver's beam. Now, if you cannot picture that right now, there is something wrong with you, Christian. A weaver's beam. And the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. This guy was really something. I mean, when you are going to battle with the weaver's beam, you are absolutely going to win. There is no question about it. And what's great is when I see these terms, I hear terms like, you know, terabytes and network and firewall and IP. It's like, you're like, what exactly, right? If I was to tell you, like, what is the difference between the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 6? One's a 4 and the other's a 6. It's like, right, you don't know any more than I do, right? We don't know what this tech means, you know, and you're just like, my computer's better than yours. Why? Because it was more expensive. I don't know. It's like, what does it even mean, right? But you see, guys, this is what I'm getting at is we will, like, rally behind and stand for and promote human development and human advancement and invention and not even really know what it's all about. Not even know whether it means anything or not. It's like, why does anybody put trust in any of this stuff? Because, I mean, when it really comes down to it, it feels like there's 5 or 6 people in the world who actually know the power of these things. And so they come together, and he is a champion. He is massive. He is a destroyer. But then he does the challenge here in verse 8. So here's where the tech starts to turn. And he stood and he shouted to the ranks of Israel, and he said to them, why do you come out and draw up in battle array? Am I not a Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. And if he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you will become our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight. And check this out, verse 11, folks. When Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I mean, really, so let's just keep in our analogy or make the application. You're like, I'm an iPhone 4, and I'm like, iPhone 6. And you're like, that's amazing. You are so amazing, and I'm scared of you now. It's like, what? This one guy who's loaded to the gills with all this weaponry, I would kind of be thinking, well, he's the only one with all that weaponry, right? I mean, just send me one guy. Let's just one-on-one this and call it good. I'm like, okay. I mean, that seems reasonable. Like, why fight? And that's what the Philistines, that's what Goliath says. Why fight all these people together when we could just fight one-on-one and whoever wins, let's just say it's a done deal. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, let's do that. Let's make that happen. But all of Israel is afraid. Now, what are they afraid of, guys? That's it. That, you know, the weaver's beam, the 500 shekels, the helmet, the shield bearer. I mean, that's what they're afraid of. They size this guy up and they're saying, this is not a winnable situation. We're not going to be able to do it. All because of this tech, all because of his arrangement, all because of his presence. Looking at the surface. Verse 12, back at the camp. Now David was a son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And so what we're going to get here in verses 12 through 15 is we're going to get little David, and this little guy is a shepherd. He's going back and forth, it says in verse 15, from Saul. He's taking supplies to his brothers. But verse 16, you have to have this set up for what happens. And the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days as he took his stand. For 40 days, this guy is flashing his iPhone 6 saying, I am the strongest, best, most expensive, fastest network here. I will destroy you. And everybody's afraid. He's saying, I have the best of the best. For 40 days, he does this. Verse 17, then Jesse said to David, his son, take now for your brothers an ephah of roasted grain, and of these 10 loaves, run to the camp with your brothers, bring also these 10 portions of cheese. So they're sending the food, send it to your commanders. Verse 19, he says, for Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Guys, how do we know right there that poor Jesse doesn't know anything about what his people are doing? Yeah, it's like, go feed your brothers because they are fighting it out for God against the Philistines. Like, poor guy doesn't know anything that's going on, right? He's totally in the dark about this. I mean, he couldn't get an email or anything, right? I mean, his sons weren't texting him, Dad, we're not fighting, quit sending food, right? And so they're sending the food, thinking that the fighting is going on. What I love about that moment is I think, you know what, guys? I think it's awesome that we give each other the benefit of the doubt. I really do. I just think faithfully. Again, I don't know how many people's lives you're in Ventura and how many people you're trying to save. I don't know who you're actually talking to in your life who's not a Christian. I don't know. But if someone was to say, hey, are the people of Ventura trying to reach the lost? Yes. Why would I say any different? Because I want, number one, I want you to think that that's what I'm doing. But I want to give each other the best. In family, we give each other the benefit of the doubt. I mean, we got to give each other the benefit of the doubt. And this is kind of why in the church or out of the church, when people criticize the forward movement of the church, oh, the church isn't going anywhere, where we're falling apart, we're not relevant, it's not going to work. It's like, I just feel like, you know what? You're not even in the battle, man. I mean, you're not even in the battle then. I mean, whatever we're trying to do, whatever efforts we're making, you know, and I'm proud of it. And I want us to move forward. I want us to be challenged and convicted always, of course. But I want to give you, as my family, the benefit of the doubt. So here we see Jesse says, go check on your sons, verse 20. So we'll just kind of, let's bring this scene to the close here. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper and took the supplies. And he went as Jesse commanded him, and he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Now remember, this has been happening for 40 days. So for like a month, this is happening, and a little more than a month, and David arrives. And they're still getting up in the morning, putting on all their armor, and they're like, 2, 4, 6, 8, who do we all really hate? Goliath! You know, and they're like, let's just go kill him! And they're all excited to just destroy him, and so they shout the war cry, they dress for battle every morning for more than a month, and now David's on the scene, verse 21, and Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army, and David left the baggage in the care of the baggage keeper. He ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. Verse 23, and as he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke the same words. And here's the difference, folks. Here's your underlinable text. Here's where you fit into this. And David heard them. Now it's all changed. Why? Because a different person has heard the challenge. I love that concept right there because it is very easy to start thinking to ourselves, we have tried to reach this lost world. We have tried to make a difference. We have tried over and over and over and over, and I just feel like I'm getting nowhere. I feel like I'm reaching nobody. I feel like that I'm irrelevant to the world. They don't care. They're in their selfish world. And guys, I just want to encourage you, just don't let that get you down. Because, and maybe even if it's not us, it might be your son or daughter, all right? It might be one of your brothers or sisters who's like, they are the ones who suddenly hear a challenge and they're like, hey, it's okay, I got this. And we've got to be okay with that. We've got to be okay with that. In fact, that's why I even just want to give a huge thanks again to what you guys did for us this summer. I mean, and many of you said that. You're like, man, I'm so thankful for you kids going out in the community and working for people and bringing the name of Jesus to this community and speaking for the Ventura congregation here, of the Ventura congregation. See, you guys, you supported young people to go out and to pull weeds and to sweat and to bleed and to work in an area. And it is okay to say, man, I struggle with that. It doesn't feel like my gift. No, it is your gift because you sent someone else to do it and you were happy about it. And you brought them the food to the battle line and said, go get them, tigers. And you inspired us. My son and daughter who was here on that, man, they came home loving the Ventura congregation. I mean, they had some tests and some dumb worldly school stuff they had to do this weekend that they couldn't miss or they'd be here. That they love you that much. They're like, I want to go help Ventura again. You are making a difference in the lives of my kids. And so somebody different may hear that challenge and say, all right, let's do something about it. Okay, so he hears the challenge, verse 24. And when all of the men of Israel saw the man, notice the one teched out man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. I have a note for myself here. When immediate inadequacy is an acceptable substitute for eternal fulfillment, man, something's wrong. So in other words, look at this teched out guy. There's no way I can kill him. What'll happen if you kill him? Well, the king is going to give you tons of money. He's going to give you his daughter, and he's going to give you a tax-free status in Israel. Oh my goodness. That's a lot of stuff. You're going to make me tax-free? Well, you're going to get to marry the king's daughter. Yeah. I won't have to pay taxes? Man, that is all right. I mean, look at that list, folks. You're going to be rich. You're going to be turned into royalty, which is what happens when you marry the king's daughter. And you will no longer pay taxes. Folks, you're in California. That should just be a hallelujah, right? I mean, imagine if they said, you are going to be royalty. We're going to give you tons of money, and you're going to be a Kennedy, and you'll never have to pay taxes again, right? We'll just be like, oh, my goodness. It's huge, but what are any of these people foregoing that for? They all know this is the reward. They're foregoing it because of the immediate inadequacy of their system. They're like, I don't have a shield bearer, and I'm not a giant. There's no way I can do this. Folks, this is the struggle, right? I'm always giving up heaven for current tech, whatever that may be, right? The house, the car, the boss, you know, the people's opinion of me. I'm always giving it up, that stuff, for this immediate inadequacy. It's ridiculous for me. Verse 26, so here's where we're going to end the scene. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him and said, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine for this? And he says, for who is this uncircumcised Philistine, this unbeliever, that he would taunt the armies of the God? And the people said, yes, that's what he'll do. You'll be rich. Verse 28, now Eliab, the oldest brother, this is David's older brother, heard what he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David. And he said, why have you come down? Man, and I'm the oldest of my family. I have four brothers under me. And it is kind of a bummer when your younger brother shows more boldness than you. It does make you mad. I mean, you just want to beat him up. And my brother Adam, who's a year and a half younger than me, kind of my partner in crime, really, as kids growing up. I mean, he always was a little bit scrappier and stronger than me, so, you know, I always wanted to beat him up and kind of couldn't. I tried, so we fought a lot. But when your younger brother is like, oh, it's okay, I'll do it, it makes you mad. And so this is the situation. So David says, who's going to kill this Goliath? Why you let him taunt us? And Eliab says, it burns against him in the middle of it. He says, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? Yeah, give me a break. He says, who's watching the sheep, David? That's your job. And then he says, I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. Now, if I was David, I'd be like, what battle? Right? So don't say that. But here Eliab says, you've only come down to see the battle. In verse 29, David said, what have I done? It was just a question. And so here's what we'll end with, guys. Little David comes down and sees all the tech. He sees the fear. He sees everything that everybody else is scared about. And he says, you know what? God's for me. We can do this. And all it really amounts to, folks, is just that. I mean, they're looking at the tech. They're looking at the advancement. They're looking at the war strategy of the Philistines. And they just think it's bigger than God. That is really the only problem with our cars and our houses and our electricity and our iPhones. That's really the only problem with it, is that at any point, and it's happened a lot, that humans have said, we are so amazing as a race, we just don't really need a God figure. We just don't really need a higher power. I mean, how much higher power could it get than our nuclear stuff and, again, electric stuff and modern stuff? How does it get any bigger than that? And guys, it's a common sin, a common distraction. And all we're trying to do is to show people, hey, I mean, we live in an electrically lit world too. I mean, we have our stuff too, but it's not my hope. that's just not what I'm trusting in. I don't think that humans are ever going to get so amazing that they could get me up from the dead. I just don't think that's ever going to happen. I think however good our tech gets, unless you can prove to me that you got the keys to the pearly gates, I don't care. I mean, how far can you take me in life? And God help me, even if you said, Eli, we can replace all your parts with all kinds of tech and you can just live for 500 years on earth. Oh, man. Why? I mean, I could have told my kids, man, I want to go to heaven and hang out with God in an amazing realm. And we were kind of sharing that we were here, man. My kids, they're ready. They asked me, Dad, can we fly on dragons in heaven? I'm like, yes. And you know why I tell them that? It's actually biblical because Hebrews 11, we read this morning, it says Abraham was seeking a city not built with hands but built by God. And God didn't show up to Abraham and said, heaven is spiritual. It's not like a city like you're thinking, Abraham, you know. But and it says, because he envisioned a city built by God, he didn't go back to Babylon because where had he come from? A city. And it was nice, right? And so he said, I was in a really nice city, but you know what heaven's going to be like? A really nice city. And some of you are like, I don't even like living in the city. Right. That was Abraham's view. What is your view of heaven? What is motivating you to carry on? Because if you're saying, man, this iPhone is pretty awesome, and you're like looking at heaven and like, man, this is super cool. We are an amazing race. And God's like, no, come to heaven. It's better. And you're like, I don't know. I got an iPhone. He's like, no, come to heaven because you get to ride on a cloud and wear a harp and sing forever. And you're like, nah, right? The iPhone's better, right? What should you be envisioning about heaven? Guys, do it. Abraham thought of a city. That's what kept him from going back to Babylon. In heaven, you will be surrounded by iPhone 7s. And they will all be interlinked. And whatever game you want to play, you can play all of them at the same time and you will always win. All right? You will always win. I mean, and you're probably like, that is the worst heaven I've ever... Right! That is not your heaven. You then arrived in hell. That, all right? You're just like, you're not in heaven. No. So what I'm saying is, whatever it is, just like Abraham, you have Hebrews 11 permission to view something tangible as your heaven. And even if it's like, well, but whatever I view will be so physical, so did Abraham. But let me ask you this. If you envision a castle with your family and like forever Thanksgivings and trampolines where you can jump as high as you, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Whatever you want to envision, do you think it will be better than that? Yes. So what's wrong with envisioning that? Nothing. That's why I'm saying God didn't show up to Abraham and say, it's way better than the city you're envisioning, you nerd. No. He said, good job, faithful Abraham. Think of a city. Think of anything that will keep you from going back to the tech. Think of anything that replaces the tech of Babylon with the eternity of heaven. I don't care what you want to think of. That's why my kids, you should hear their plans for heaven. And my 17-year-old, we still do this. Like, we'll be sitting around the table and she'll like read some cool article about some cool little kitten or something and she'll be like, Dad, I totally want one of those in heaven. And I'm like, done. Done. And guess who wants to go to heaven more? My 17-year-old daughter. She wants to go to heaven more because now, Kira, come to a kegger. It's so fun. Do you have three-eyed fluffy pink kittens? No. Then I ain't coming. They got those in heaven. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. The technology means nothing. It will all go away, and heaven will not. It will all go away, and we will live forever. You know, we will live forever together in whatever world you want to envision. Do it, because it's better than any buttons we're pushing here. It's better than any Apple download here. It will be better. So whatever your need is today, folks, come with us. You know, come with us. Let's go to heaven together. And none of us will be hypocrites in heaven, so church will be really fun, all right? We'll all be perfect, we'll all be lovely, we'll all be good friends. Everything's going to be awesome in heaven, and we just got to put up with the patience and the difficulties that we have now, but it'll be better in heaven, so please come with us. But if you're here today and you're outside of Christ, the invitation is open. We're ready to baptize you into Christ. If you have questions, if you want to know more about this future, all right, let us know. But we love you with all of our hearts, but let's come to heaven together. Whatever need you have, let's make it known as we stand.